This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the chief executive officer of the Chicago Public Schools, Dr. Janice Jackson. Dr. Jackson was introduced by Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and the mayor referred to Dr. Jackson as our Dr. J, if you remember the great basketball player Julius Erving. Anyhow, Dr. Jackson is the chief executive officer of the third largest school district in the United States. Since assuming that role in 2015, she's focused on building excellence, equity, and access across the school district, focusing on CPS high schools through a comprehensive high school strategy dedicated to raising both the bar and the stakes for those very crucial academic years. She's dedicated to ensure that every student in Chicago has a high-quality high school option within 3 miles of their home. Dr. Jackson holds a master's in leadership and administration and a doctorate in education in policy studies and urban school leadership from the University of Illinois at Chicago. She was a member of the University of Chicago's Network for College Success and is a past board member of the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Dr. Jackson began by giving out all sorts of good news. The graduation rate in Chicago public schools has reached 78.9%, the highest in the recorded history of the school district. Elementary schools are performing at an all-time high across the district, outpacing other rivals in math and English. The one-year dropout rates have reached an all-time low. And last year, Chicago public high school graduates received $1.3 billion in funding for higher education. Dr. Janice Jackson was a student, a faculty member, a principal, an administrator, and now the CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. She said this should be an exciting time for Chicago Public Schools, and she does not expect a strike. She believes that negotiations will result in a fair contract for faculty and the children and the administration of the Chicago Public Schools. She said, "It's mandatory that every student should have access to a quality education and that we have secured funding for 2019 and 2020. She said there will be no layoffs of faculty. She's very, very hopeful about reaching an agreement with the Chicago Teachers Union. The Chicago Public Schools have proposed a 5-year program with the union that will result in a 16% salary increase. She's encouraged by the growth in support and the scores achieved on national tests by the African American and Hispanic communities in the city of Chicago. Her goal, she said, provide strong teachers, provide strong principals, and provide a strong academic program. The Chicago Public Schools have the largest international baccalaureate program in the United States. There are 45 schools that offer dual language programs, 23 schools for gifted students. She says we must offer diversity and choice. A problem in the Chicago public schools has been the leaving of school principals. For several years, this had hovered at about the 25% range. This last year, the number has dropped to only 10%. She says the new school board has as their priority working with the communities that send students to the Chicago public schools. They're partnering with many business and universities to improve the educational outcomes. The school district is now offering individual life mentoring, 200 additional teachers in such areas as social work, dealing with special needs. All of this is dedicated to keeping the students warm, safe, and dry, and hopefully continuing the upward march of the Chicago Public School System.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Mayor, you're on.
So Jay was a little modest. The City Club isn't just sponsoring the reception tonight. They really have been a great partner with us in thinking about this address and helping us get organized and making sure that people had an opportunity to hear what we have to say tonight. So I will keep you in suspense, but I'm here for a different purpose. And that's to welcome to the podium Dr. Janice Jackson. But let me say a few words about her and what is happening at CPS. Earlier today, CPS announced our graduation rate reached 78.9%. That is the highest in our city's history and driven, I'm proud to say, by our African-American students. 2 days before that, we announced that Chicago's elementary students scored an all-time high in math and reading levels. And while continuing to outpace and outperform, their peers nationwide. And just a few days before that, another report revealed that CPS's one-year dropout rate reached an all-time low of only 6%, with improvements driven by African-American and Hispanic males, the group that we have been most concerned about, most focused on, and we're seeing results. All three of these announcements mark the latest in a string of successes and record-setting achievements that have come to define the tenure of the remarkable woman I have the honor of introducing, CPS CEO Dr. Janice Jackson. Since taking the reins of CPS nearly 2 years ago, we have seen our students reach ever-increasing heights of promise and success. From new heights in graduation rates to new highs in college enrollment and scholarship, record levels of capital investment, the expansion of school support staff, and much, much more. Now, Dr. Jackson will be the first to tell you that these successes don't belong to her alone. She'll tell you they're the shared achievement of countless dedicated teachers, staff, principals, parents, school administrators, and, of course, our students, all doing everything they can to make sure that our kids get the education they need to succeed. And she wouldn't be wrong. But lucky for me, I get to speak first. What Dr. Jackson won't tell you is that success is due in large part because of her tremendous talent and leadership in recognizing the value of each of these individuals play. That achievement isn't top-down, but comes through as an inclusive, collaborative process with everyone working towards the shared goal of expanding equity, inclusion, and driving excellence. It's an outlook honed over life at CPS, first as a student, then as a star teacher, principal, administrator, chief education officer, and finally, and rightfully, CEO. In that way, too, Dr. Jackson understands, like I do, that success isn't the result of one program or one initiative, but a holistic approach to education and youth development that ensures every single student receives the support and inspiration that they need to succeed, regardless of who they are or what zip code they come from. As I've said many times before, the talent we have in our classrooms is better than any other place in the world. And I know that and I mean it. It's here in Chicago's classrooms that we'll find the next big thing, the next big idea that will change the way we live and experience the world. Our future rests on our ability, not just in developing that talent, but in inspiring our students to recognize the promise in themselves. You heard me say this before. Someone said, and it's so true, that our children are a product of the adult ecosystem around them. And I'm proud to say that under the leadership of Dr. Jackson, we are doing everything we can to encapsulate our students with love, support, empathy, so that they have the opportunity to grow and to thrive. We are standing at a moment where we can truly transform the lives of our young people, and with it, the entire future of our city. And there is no one more capable or qualified than Dr. Jackson to build on our record-breaking success and holding that future in our grasp. And let me just depart from my prepared remarks. You know, Dr. Jackson and I didn't know each other very well until I got elected. And we've spent a lot of time together, particularly over these last couple months. And I will tell you, you know, I have had the benefit in my life of working with some really smart and capable people, really sophisticated CEOs that know how to drive change within a business and organization. And Dr. Jackson ranks at the top of that list. And the other thing I think you should know is what I'm saying, the praise that I have for her and my experience of her isn't unique to me. It's not unique to the people in her leadership team. I had the occasion to be talking to a teacher at an event, and she didn't really know me, and she started waxing on about her experience with Dr. Jackson as her principal on the West Side, and the praise was just pouring out, and it just so happened at that moment that Dr. Jackson was walking up. But that experience of people all a part of the 360 experience of Dr. Jackson, where they feel respected and heard and supported, that's real. And all of us would envy having that kind of praise from the people that we work with. So without further ado, let me bring up to the stage our Dr. J, yeah. Dr. Janice Jackson.
Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot, for that wonderful introduction. I'm sufficiently embarrassed right now, so I'm trying to get myself back together. But it's a wonderful occasion. It's wonderful to be here on this occasion. As I've said time and time again, the start of the school year just holds a very special place in my heart as a former teacher, but more importantly as a parent, because I could imagine, like every other parent in this room, I can't wait for my kids to go back to school next week. I was just sharing with the folks at my table, my daughter literally FaceTimed me 7 times yesterday during the board meeting. She really needs something to do. But I can say that in addition to the feeling that I get at the beginning of every single school year, this one is especially special to me, mainly because I truly believe, and as you heard from the introductory remarks, I've been in CPS inside and out for my entire life, starting in elementary school, then as a teacher. I don't know who prepared the mayor's remarks. I was not a great teacher. I was okay. Just okay. Now, I know I was a great principal. I will stand by that. But that wasn't the CPS we inherited back then, but we're in a better place now. But I can stand here and honestly say that there is no better time than today to be leading and working and being educated than it is right now today in Chicago Public Schools. One of the things that I'm excited about, and you heard from the introduction, we have a 5-year vision that's going to guide the work that we plan to do over the next few years in our district. And I'm happy to report that the mayor shares in this vision and has embraced this vision. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the tenets of that today. This is no small achievement, developing a strategic plan that not only top leadership agrees with and sees alignment in, but more importantly, that our parents and the folks on the ground doing the heaviest lift, our teachers, also see themselves in this vision. Large systems often struggle to clarify what they're doing and how they plan to get there. But I'm happy to report that CPS has been able to do that with the launch of our 5-year vision this year. I want to make it clear and make sure that there's no confusion that CPS is an academic institution and that will always be our number one priority. We have an unwavering commitment to ensuring that every single student, no matter where they live, has access to a high quality education. And we can only do that when we are governed by strong leaders in our district and also making sure that we are fiscally responsible and committed to integrity, all key tenets in our vision. For the first time in memory, we are starting our school year with funding that is secure. You probably heard recently we received 2 upgrades from Fitch and S&P, which we were really encouraged by. And our budget was also endorsed and approved, I might say. Lawrence, you can tell me if I'm going too far. By the Civic Federation. But I got the mic. No, I'm just joking. But simply put, there's no crisis this year. And when I became CEO, one of the first things that I committed to was to bring about a level of stability and certainty that our teachers, our students, and our families so desperately wanted. For 2 straight years, our principals received their budgets in early spring, which allowed them to plan and plan effectively for a successful school year. They were able to hire and pick from a larger pool of talented candidates to teach our children every day. And unlike years past, they know that there will be no layoffs come September if they fail to meet their enrollment goals. We're also hopeful that we can make a deal with our partners at the Chicago Teachers Union. As the mayor said earlier this week, we see no reason why we can't reach an agreement in the coming weeks and give our teachers the fair contract that they deserve. We have made a generous offer to our teachers, which includes an average salary increase of 16%, over the next 5 years. What that means for the average teacher in CPS, whose salary right now is about $78,000, over the course of 5 years, that will amount to an average salary of $97,000. What does this mean for a second-year teacher in CPS who currently makes $52,000? At the end of this contract, that would mean a salary of close to $73,000. We've made significant structural changes to CPS to put ourselves in a better, stronger fiscal position, and we will continue to do that so that we can build on the record-breaking academic progress that our district has achieved. We better understand as a district why some schools struggle and why others do not, which is why we've made a commitment around ensuring greater equity, not only in resource allocation, but also in programming and other things that contribute to student success. We can't do this work alone, and that's why I'm so excited and encouraged to see so many folks in this room. We have partners like the ones at the Chicago Public Education Fund, Ingenuity, the Consortium on Chicago School Research, the Network for College Success, to name a few. These organizations, like so many others, have been at the center of our progress. And in some cases, for decades, they've been working to help make Chicago Public Schools a stronger school system. So the data that we celebrate today, this data belongs to all of us. This morning, we announced our graduation rate is now just a hair, dare I say, I want to say 80% so bad, just under 79%, which is a record high and nothing to sneeze at. When I started my teaching career in CPS 20 years ago, that rate was closer to 50%, and I spent much of my career on the South and the West Side, and unfortunately, it was much lower than that. The progress that we've made is important, especially for a large urban school system like Chicago Public Schools. And the recent progress that we've made as a school district has been driven by African American and Latino students. Many of the students outperform, just like other subgroups in the district, outperform their peers in the state. But if we're going to meet the ambitious goals that we've outlined in our 5-year vision for Chicago Public Schools, we understand that there's more work to be done. We celebrate the fact that earlier this week, more and more of our students are meeting and exceeding the standards on reading and math at the elementary school level. We are encouraged by the tremendous progress that our high school seniors are making, with half of them graduating earning an early college credit, and all of our students last year secured over $1.3 billion in scholarship funding to support their education. Metric matters a lot to me because I believe there is no greater expression of confidence in CPS students than when our universities and other partners invest in our children. You won't hear a splashy speech or announcement from me. I'm a purist at my core when it comes to education. And I know that in order to have a great school, you need a few things. You need strong teachers, you need an effective principal, and more importantly, you need a strong academic program. That's why we have prioritized improving the quality of the programming that happens in the classroom, because the real work and the magic happens in thousands of classrooms across this district every single day. We now have more STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We are the largest IB network in the country, something that we're extremely proud of. And last year when we made announcements, expanded our IB program, we prioritized neighborhood schools. We now have 45 schools that offer a dual language program where students can learn a language by the time they graduate from elementary school and high school. We have 72 schools that specialize in fine and performing arts, and we have 23 schools just for gifted students. I highlight this because it's really important that a district this large has diversity and choice, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. We would not be able to do this work if we did not have strong educators and talented educators in the classes with our kids every day. We've made principal recruitment and training a priority, and I believe it's at the centerpiece of all the great work in the theory of action that we've implemented in CPS. We're doing more than we've done before to empower our principals and give them the autonomy that they need in order to create great learning environments. This is evident by our continued success in retaining great leaders here in CPS. Just 5 years ago, over a quarter of our principals would leave each year at the end of the school year. This year, I'm happy to report that that rate is less than 10%. This stability, this is no easy feat. And this stability is extremely important because research is clear that when schools have, when children have access to high quality leaders, they can do more. We're also here represented here today by some of our amazing principal leaders, and I'm going to ask them to stand and be recognized for all of their hard work as well as their colleagues' hard work as they represent 660 amazing people who lead our schools every day. Are there any principals in the room? I see some of you. Don't be afraid to stand. Oh, Michael. I thought we had somebody on the back. I thought we had a principal take. They just came back. Well, you can give them a shout out from afar. The bottom line is that multiple studies and multiple metrics have identified that CPS is improving at a rate that outpaces their peers throughout the country. Imagine that. We have students from the inner city where 3 out of 4 of our kids are beating the national odds. I am so proud to be a part of this district, and everyone in Chicago should share in that pride. Last year, when I came to speak at City Club, I talked to you about the need to cheer on our students, and I believe over the past year you've done that. In many ways, this is a new era for Chicago Public Schools, and we must not miss this opportunity to build on the remarkable progress that we've made. For one, we have a new mayor who we heard from today, and I'm excited to see that our visions align so closely, especially around transparency and equity. We also have a new board that, like our team, has prioritized working directly with the community and engaging with the community so that they can be a part of the decision-making process. We also made a commitment to equity, and one way to showcase that is the establishment of the new equity office, whose express purpose is to examine all of our work and all of our policies through an equity lens so we can start to change some of the outcomes that have plagued so many of our communities. Is school choice helping or hurting? Is accountability creating more or less equity? How is our capital program driving for equity? What about transportation? These are the types of things that we're talking about. If a student has to travel more than an hour to find a school that they think is safe and meets their needs, while other students can simply walk out of their front door and walk down the street, that is not equity. All of these issues are extremely important, and these are the type of issues that we will be trying to address this school year. All of them are equally important, but I believe at the core it all goes back to our commitment around equity. For us, equity doesn't mean give everybody the same thing, because we know that that doesn't work. In an equitable system, we want to ensure that students have everything that they need in order to succeed. This means that some students need more in order to be successful, and we have to be okay with that. As Mayor Lightfoot mentioned in her introductory remarks, in our vision, we are prioritizing Black and Latino males as an area of focus in this 5-year vision. While we've seen some improvement in order to meet our goals, this is a group that we have to keenly focus on in order to make sure we reach our goals as a district. Over the coming years, you will see targeted support and investments, particularly in this group. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the programs that we've started today already. Earlier this summer, we announced a partnership with the University of Chicago's Education Lab. For the first time in history, Chicago Public Schools included option schools in our 5-year vision. Because if we're serious about seeing 90% of our students graduate from college, then we have to pay attention to our most vulnerable students, and many of them are educated in our option schools. This summer, we launched a program for them that has had amazing results, the Summer for Change program, which is an innovative program where we identify 400 students who attend option schools. These students were identified as students who are more likely to be either perpetrators or victims of violence. For many of these students, trust is scarce and anger is overabundant. And turning things around can be as simple as having a trusted adult in their life to help put them on the right path. That's why we created this program that provided our students with individualized mentoring, a stipend, participation in trauma-informed group therapy, as well as field trips to expose them to all the wonderful things that this great city has to offer. I remember talking to some of these students when I had an opportunity to go and visit them. Students like Kayla, who spoke at our board meeting yesterday and talked about the fact that she found a family through the Summer for Change program. Or like the young man Rodney, who told me that he was going to do everything in his power to avoid hanging out on the street corner because he wants to be a teacher, a promise that I promised him that I would help him achieve that. We provided wraparound services for these students all summer, and I'm happy to report that the program is wrapping up, and we have not had a single student that participated in this program be the victor or perpetrator of any violence this summer. The theme that you will continue to hear is our support for our most vulnerable students. For our students with special needs, we are investing more and more in special education staffing. This year, there will be 200 additional, so far today, there are 200 additional teachers in our schools working with our students with special needs, and we still have more work to do. We've made a commitment to have more case managers, social workers, paraprofessionals, and other wraparound supports in the building to meet the students where they are in order to make sure that they too have access to the education they deserve. We've made this commitment with our partners at CTU, believing that our vision is similar in that our kids deserve quality schools. As a society, we will continue to play catch up if we do not prioritize our students in most need. This year, we made a commitment to expanding pre-K for students. The universal pre-K program for four-year-olds will allow us to level the playing field. We've also made a commitment to ensure that our schools are built to suit those programs. We invested more than $600 million in school building upgrades throughout the city. This includes enhancements in our pre-K programs, science labs, athletic fields, performing arts spaces, and some of the maintenance that really isn't sexy and you won't see us cutting a ribbon around. But it's the stuff that keeps kids warm, safe, and dry in our schools and helps us to maintain our aging infrastructure. It includes these new pre-K classrooms, as I stated earlier, to make the classes more accessible for our students. We've also prioritized accessibility throughout the city as a goal outlined in our capital plan. I can go on and on about the many investments that we've made, in particular around special education and bilingual education, but none is more significant than the investment that we've made around curriculum equity. And before I tell you what the curriculum equity initiative is, let me explain to you why it's needed. We surveyed teachers in CPS and learned that nearly half of them say that they work in schools where they are not provided with the curriculum. This means many of them are left to their own devices to create the learning opportunities and lessons for kids every day. Two-thirds of the teachers surveyed said that they spend at least 2 hours, most of which on the weekends, searching the internet, I'm not going to tell you which websites, looking for instructional materials for their students. Some of our teachers, especially our newer teachers working in some of our toughest schools, report they spend 6 to 7 hours working so that they can differentiate lessons for kids. The average teacher spends more than $250 of their own money to support children in the classroom. I understand this. This isn't a surprise to me as a former teacher. I know that one of the ways that we can help reduce this frustration is by leveling the playing field and making sure that every single teacher doesn't have to guess at what is grade level appropriate material. Curriculum design is not the teacher's job. It's not in their job description. Their job is to teach the curriculum, not write it. So we have to do something different. In the next 3 years, CPS will make a significant investment to create a library of resources online for teachers to use across the city. And it will have several goals. The first goal is that the curriculum will be culturally responsive. Research is clear that when students see themselves in the curriculum, they're much more connected to what's being presented to them. Second, it will support our diverse learners, both our students with special needs, but also our gifted and accelerated students who are ready to go to the next level, and sometimes the teachers don't have the time to move them along because of the differentiation in the classroom. Third, built into this system, we will identify students who need additional support. Again, taking away the uncertainty or the guesswork from teachers to figure out who needs more support and who doesn't. The fourth component is that we will make sure that social-emotional learning is embedded. One of the tenets in our vision is to educate the whole child. While we talk a lot about our gains in reading and math, we know in order for our students to have a world-class education, they must have access to a comprehensive curriculum. And finally, we want to make sure that our curriculum is translated into Spanish for our English learners. We have to make sure that as they are learning English, that the curricular materials are accessible for them. Our curricular equity initiative will go a long way towards improving the work-life balance for our teachers. Just knowing that that material is available and all they have to do is go in and adapt it for their different students is a huge lift and burden off their backs. What this also means is that algebra in Lakeview won't look like algebra. I'm sorry, algebra in Lakeview will look like algebra in Little Village. It means that teachers can concentrate on doing their jobs, which is to engage our children and help them learn. Another way that we're supporting our kids is to diversify our teaching staff. We know that our teaching staff does not represent the student body. 90% of the students in CPS are children of color, while only 50% of our teachers are. We set a goal of hiring 3,000 new teachers of color over the next 5 years. And we're not just hiring for the sake of diversity. The research is clear that when students see teachers who look like them and have shared experiences, there's more connection and better relationships in the classroom. We have adopted a policy requiring every graduate in CPS to have a comprehensive post-secondary plan when they leave school. We've retrained our counselors to make sure that they are up to date and able to advise our students and serve as life coaches so that they can make great choices. We have a great partnership with our friends at the City Colleges, where they've hired more counselors to support some of our most vulnerable schools and neighborhood schools through the Navigators program to help students explore their options. The result of all of this is a comprehensive effort to support the children here in Chicago. We strengthen our partnerships with the philanthropic community and the business community in Chicago. We relaunched the Children's First Fund, which is organized to help us better access all of the support that this generous community has to offer for CPS. One of the things that we're extremely excited about is providing real-world job experiences for our students. With our partners at the City Colleges, we have created a seamless pre-K through 14 education system. We're coordinating on so many different levels. We're making it easier for our children to enroll in school. We're coordinating on curriculum. We're offering more dual credit programs in growing fields like healthcare, IT, and advanced manufacturing. We're also building a bridge between the social service supports that children get in high school and making sure that they can continue to get them in college. We have to recognize that many of our young people won't go to college right away. And you've heard the mayor make a commitment during her campaign around improving career and technical education. What people don't know is that we do have many programs throughout this city. Right now, 73 of our high schools offer career pathways in a dozen different areas. But we have to strengthen those programs. Last year, our students earned 3,600 industry credentials, but we know that we have so much to do in order to provide a labor force. By 2023, Mayor Lightfoot and I have committed to ensuring that all students in career and technical education programs are exposed to different careers by graduation, by the time they graduate. And half of all of those eligible students will be matched with an internship or an apprenticeship that will help them make the bridge between a high school and a rewarding career. I'm asking all of you in this room to be on the lookout for emails from our office so that you can help support this great initiative. I'll be the first person to tell you that as a school system, we did not prioritize career and technical education as strongly as we should have. We had a lot of work to do to create a college-going culture. But I'm also here to say that we're recommitted to the work around career and technical education, and we're looking for partners just like you to help us support our students. I want to close today by talking about the word impossible. Every generation tries to define what it is and what it is not. And every generation redefines it on their own. Albert Einstein once said it was impossible to harness nuclear energy, but then he lived long enough to see that happen. Others said that as a country, we would never break the speed of sound, and yet we did. I've also heard people say that low-income kids can't learn. And I'm sad to say that I've heard fellow educators say that more times than I'd like to admit. I've heard it from politicians, I've heard it at coffee shops, I've heard it at dinner parties. But we can no longer justify low expectations in order to justify underfunding public education. We have, yes. And CPS is doing its part, because we continue to prove people wrong every single day and show that all kids can learn when we invest in them. Over the years, we've set a lot of goals for ourselves as a district around attendance, test scores, proficiency rates. And I'm happy to say that we have met those goals in many cases and blew it out of the water, while some still remain a little bit beyond our reach. The key here, though, is that we are never satisfied and we will never give up until every single student across this great city has access to a high quality education. Which brings me to something that I believe symbolizes our commitment the most. Next week, we will be opening a brand new high school in Englewood. And it's no secret that Englewood has had its fair share of hard times. Much has been talked about, written about, and well documented. But today, there's a new chapter unfolding in Englewood. Parents are enrolling their children in record numbers. The neighborhood is rebounding. The city is invested. And people are staying. Throughout this process of Englewood, which I'm not going to talk a whole lot about, I was constantly reminded of a famous line from Field of Dreams that said, if you build it, they will come. Instead, my experience has shown me a different bit of knowledge. Instead, I choose to believe if we invest in them, they will stay. That is exactly what is happening in Englewood, and I witnessed that firsthand. Last week, we witnessed lines wrapped around the campus with students and their parents excited and registering for school. Kids are excited about the possibility of what's to come, and many still are in disbelief that this is really for them. They haven't given up, and neither have we. I'll be cutting the ribbon for the new Englewood STEM High School next week on Tuesday. You can see this is near and dear to me. The mayor will be on hand as well. The community, I'm sure, will be out in force. And the kids will be there ready to learn. There's a renewed sense of hope and a message for the people of Englewood that we believe in you because of this school. And that's our message for every community in Chicago. We believe in you. We are investing in you. And as long as I'm CEO, we will never give up in you, give up on you. Thank you. No, Englewood gets to me. It's my baby.
Okay. Great. If anybody has any questions that they would like to direct, hold up your blue form. I see Governor Ivey going around picking up a few of those, and we'll start with some of the questions that we have received. This is from Jane Grover, who submitted this over the internet. How is student population health ensured in this era of anti-vaccination? Weren't expecting that.
No,
one.
I was not. That's a good one. Real quick, Chicago Public Schools, like many school districts, has requirements around vaccination. So at entry grades, we do require students to show proof of that. And we principals work extremely hard, as well as our nurses, to enter that information in the system. And we also have a policy of making sure that families comply. In the event that there are families who do not believe in vaccination, that is well documented. We also make sure that we keep an eye out for those students. But I'm happy to report that this has not been a huge issue for us in CPS. We think we have good systems and policies in place. And so I think it's going okay. Unless you know something that I don't know.
Great.
All right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Shelby. This is from Shara Rivette, City Club member. She's affiliated with the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Shara, where are you sitting? Right down there. Okay. First, she gives you this pat on the back.
Yeah.
Thank you for your leadership, blah, blah, blah. We'll skip all of that. She's very concerned about sexual abuse issues, which has been a problem in the CPS. Could you talk about plans for a pilot to do comprehensive sexual abuse preventive education to students?
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Shar, for that question. We share the same concern around sexual abuse in our school system. One of the things that we have committed to is to build on all of the things that we've done. You've heard me talk about the Office of Student Protections, the background checks. But we're moving into phase two, which really gets us to the information awareness part of this. And we're working with community-based organizations to come into our schools and provide training, and in some cases provide training in more unique ways than what we can provide as a district. So we're working with groups who are coming in, for example, that are doing plays and other things to help make students aware of consent and boundaries, but more importantly, how to report that in it folds into our campaign around protecting Chicago's children. So we have made that commitment. We hired a new chief officer for student protections in Title IX, Cammy Pratt. I'm not sure if she's here today, but she has hit the ground running and is working collaboratively with so many of our community-based partners throughout the city, as well as the Children's Advocacy Center. So you all should expect to hear more about that pilot and those partners and those partnerships. And if you have children in CPS schools, I encourage you to talk to your principal and LSEs about that, because we have a group of people who are really at the ready that want to come in and work directly with students and teachers in our schools. And as a district, we welcome that.
Okay, thank you very much. You can applaud. This is from Lawrence Massal with the Civic Federation. Thank you for your service and credit rating upgrade.
Thank you.
Remember transactional analysis and bear trapping? Okay. City Colleges offers free tuition to CPS students with a B average. Is it working? And are CPS graduates staying in Chicago for college and beyond?
Yeah. I don't want to make up anything on the last question around how many students actually stay, but to answer your first question, it is absolutely working. When we first started offering dual credit and dual enrollment programs, there were a few hundred students in there. That number is now in the thousands. What we also know, and this has been published widely, is that Chicago is one of the most educated cities in the country with more people earning degrees. Now, we have a lot of work to do around employment and matching that up, but because of our partnerships, because so many of our students are graduating and going off to college, I think that we're contributing to the city in a way that's extremely positive, helping us to educate our city. But we also have to work on job training skills, and that's why the career and technical education piece was a heavy focus today, because we have to get them to and through college, but we also have to make sure that they have the skills so that they can be successful. But we've had some pretty impressive results with the City Colleges program, and I'm just looking forward to continuing to build on that.
Okay, thank you. We've got a lot of fans here. These are really good questions here. Bill Yates, Dr. Yates, where are you, William? Right there. Thank you. His question, Dr. J, is, can college prep testing become an integral part of high school curriculum? I can read. I'm a graduate of the Chicago Public Schools.
I think I understand the question. So in CPS, as the entire state of Illinois, every high school graduate has to take a college entrance exam, the SAT. So we already have that requirement, and many other states are starting to do that. The thing that I'm encouraged by is when we first came up with this requirement, people worried that the average at that time ACT score would decline. And what we actually saw is what teachers like myself and others knew already, is that there were so many kids who were college ready but not college bound because they didn't know that they had that potential. And because we test everybody, there are more and more kids that see themselves as, you know, potential students in college. As far as making the preparation an integral part, most of our high schools offer test prep. But what I talked about in my remarks around curriculum, that's the real test prep. You can't make up, 11 or 12 years of education in a 6-week course. Those prep courses are great. They give you a nice little blip or boost, but it really starts in pre-K. And so our theory of action is to get our kids in school earlier, keep them there longer, and to provide them with the same quality of curriculum that they would get in any other school system. And so that's the work that the Curriculum Equity Initiative is seeking to achieve. And we believe that's the best test prep to make sure kids are learning every single day in the classroom.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. This is from our City Club board member and our program chair, Anne-Marie St. Germain, right down here. She wants to know about experiential learning. It's so valuable,
yeah.
Affording a young person the chance to expand their horizons. And you alluded to some of this.
Yep.
But how can business people help? Is there somewhere in CPS that they can contact?
Yeah.
And
well, first of all, I don't know if Francie slipped you that, our director of, but it actually, we polled our principals this summer and asked, what is it that you need? And of course, you know, some of the traditional things came up that you know, anyone would ask for when seeking support. But the number one thing that stood out that surprised us is that our principals want more support for experiential learning for our students. First of all, just here in Chicago, there's still so many schools where children don't even get a chance to come downtown. But in addition to that, a lot of our high schools have really expanded travel abroad and travel throughout the country. And so that's something that we are looking to build upon. That's not my phone, is it? Okay. One of the things that we're setting up through our Children's First Fund is we want to create a fund for that. And so soon you'll be hearing more about how we think this could work. As far as career and exposure, this is an area that I think people can walk out of here right away and help us figure out. One of the things that we're asking is for better partnerships, and we appreciate partnerships where kids get to come out and visit and see a boardroom, et cetera. That's nice. But we're really looking to develop robust partnerships where we take them on a journey, where they understand the diverse experiences and career pathways, because far too many of our students only know about a handful of careers. And so we're going to be calling on partners to help us support that work. We know that people are ready to do this. People have been waiting for us to get organized in a way to accept that work. And I'm happy to report that with the relaunch of the Children's First Fund, we're in a much better position to take advantage of your generosity.
Thank you. By the way, the grammar school that I went to is one that unfortunately has been closed, Lafayette Grammar School. But I always tell people the two most famous graduates, Saul Bellow and Ed Mazur.
Oh, good.
Anyhow, this question is from Marie Donovan with DePaul University. Marie is sitting right back there. She says, you've served in a variety of roles across CPS. What's one lesson you've learned from all those roles that you'd like to see implemented in our schools or elsewhere in the district?
Tough
one.
There are so many, but I think the thing that drives me the most is just this commitment for excellence. I talked a little bit about that today. I think from my experience, both growing up in the district, but also educating students in this district, is that we have to have across the board high expectations for our students, but high expectations and support. And what that means is you can't put demands on kids that are unreasonable that they can't meet, but you also can't walk in a room and expect that they can't meet them because of the color of their skin or where they're coming from or the way that they sound. And so for me, what's driven me throughout my career as a teacher, principal, has been I'm going to make sure that the students that I serve reach high expectations, but I'm going to support them all the way through. On the flip side of that, you can't just support them without giving them the rigor that they need in order to be successful. There is a such thing as loving somebody to death. And so my experience has always been I'm going to love you, but I'm going to challenge you to do your very best. And because of that, I've been able to do remarkable things in situations that people thought, was impossible, or address issues that people thought were intractable.
Very good. This is from CPS parent Keith Lathan. Keith, where are you? Right back there. Okay, Keith. He says that
my son's best friend's dad, so this better be an easy one.
This one's a real softball. Okay. He says, I found the CPS website to be very effective. His son has probably helped him navigate it. I also want to applaud Dr. Jackson and her staff for the progress that has been made over the years at high schools across the city, specifically Westinghouse, Brooks, Lindblom. How do we replicate this success at additional schools?
Yeah. Thank you. And we spend a lot of time talking about this. I think that all of the schools that you noted are terrific schools, but from a capacity standpoint, we know everybody can't attend those schools. And so my approach has been, we have to make sure that we have high quality options throughout the city. We have to stop over obsessing about the same 5 high schools, the same 10 elementary schools, and make sure that people have good options in their community. I believe you should go to whatever school you can get into or whatever school you want to attend. But I also believe you should have a choice, a viable choice, that's a real choice, that's right in your neighborhood where you can go and get the education that you need and deserve. And so part of what I've been trying to do in this role is to, we will continue to invest in those selective enrollment schools and schools that have been able to, you know, attract some of our brightest kids in the district. But we also know that there are children who want to go to school in their community. There are great teachers who work in our neighborhood schools, and we have to strengthen them. And so investments like IB, STEM, and some of the other academic programs that I talked about earlier, I think are the key. The University of Chicago published a study that showed that students who could have attended selective enrollment schools that attended other schools with IB programs and CPS fare at the same level and in some cases better than their peers who attended those schools. And we have to start digging into that research a little bit more. I know that people make choices for a lot of reasons around schools, but one of the things that I've been trying to do in this role is to talk about what's really happening in our schools, be more transparent about the data, and really open up everybody's eyes to the fact that we have so many great great options in our district, but also working hard to make sure that we have many anymore, in particular on the south and the west side of Chicago.
Great, great. Now, you talked about the opening of the new STEM high school in Englewood, and that were you and your staff surprised that there were over 1,500 applications to attend that school?
No. You know, I wasn't surprised. There were days that I doubted that, of course, after, you know, people criticized us for the decisions that we made. But I, as I've said before, in order to address some of the issues, the enrollment issue that we have in Chicago, it's no secret. And pretending like it doesn't exist because we don't want to make tough decisions, it really doesn't do the students who have to attend those schools proper service. And so it was a rough road. It was a tough decision, one that I didn't take lightly. But when I saw those students ready to go in school, when we had the signing day for them, the anticipation I have, I'm sure they have going into the school next week, to me, it's all worth it. Nothing was more fulfilling than a conversation that I had with the parent who, like so many, was asking me how to get their kid into another school. And I was explaining to her, we don't do that. We don't do that. But I asked where she lived. And when she told me where she lived, I said, you know, you're in the boundary for the new Englewood High School. She said, oh, well, we didn't apply for that school. I didn't know about it before GoCPS. And I said, well, if you live in that school, it's your neighborhood school. You don't have to do anything except show up. And just the relief that I saw on her face is something that needs to happen more often. I'm not in that position sometimes when people are asking about other opportunities, but I was happy to be in a position to offer her an opportunity where she didn't have to jump through 50 hoops in order to get her kid in a good school, that it was something that was there and accessible, and you could go there by virtue of where you live, which to me is the way it ought to be.
Very good. Just a couple more questions. Could you talk a little bit about the relationship of CPS to charter schools?
Oh, it's a great question. Charter schools are part of Chicago Public Schools. And, you know, I've said time and time again, I am not the type of person who believes that one school type is better than another school type. I think that we are stronger together as one district. With that said, we've also made a commitment to strengthen accountability and parity between district schools and charter schools. And that's something that I will continue to champion as long as I'm in this role. At the end of the day, most parents, they don't know if they can't tell you if they're in a charter school or a district school. Like everybody in this room, they're looking for a good opportunity for their kids. They're looking at how the school is performing. They're looking at the proximity of the school. And I believe that choice is something that shouldn't be reserved for middle-class families or people with money and access. I think parents and communities across this city have a right to make a choice. But as a district, we had to make sure that we were treating all schools the same. And in some cases, that meant improving the accountability and how schools are rated, which we've done, improving the resource allocation and making sure that there's parity there. And then the other thing is getting back to the essence of what charter schools were created for, which was to innovate and do some things that maybe, you know, the bureaucracy didn't allow us to do quickly. And if we are still having these conversations about one versus the other, we miss that opportunity to learn. Our kids are going into schools working with educators who believe the same things in both school settings. They want kids to be successful. And so as a leader, it's important for me to bring our charter partners to the table, respecting their autonomy, but also making sure that there's parity and accountability across the board for district schools as well as charter schools.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Jackson, do you believe that school will start on time this year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Great.
Thank you.
This is kind of a personal question, okay?
Oh, Lord.
I just read this profile of you in Chicago Magazine.
Please don't.
I got to ask this question. My wife said you have to ask her.
God.
Okay.
Well, you got
to
do it then.
It's about footwear. In that article, it says that you favor 3-inch high heels, and you don't have any flats at all. What do you have against flat shoes?
You know what's the biggest secret? And well, you know this because if you saw the Chicago Magazine, you saw the unfortunate picture of me from high school in there. But what most people don't know is I do prefer, you know, to dress up. But I was a tomboy my entire life. I played basketball. The first time I put on a pair of heels was at prom, senior year, and it's been uphill ever since then.